Good morning, everybody. I'm Rona Novick. I have really the schuss to be the dean of the Azrieli Graduate School and work with passionate and compassionate educators. And I am really thrilled to be sharing with you this morning some thoughts on raising giving children in the Give Me generation. I'll give some background to why this topic and why I think it's important. Suffice it to say that I feel an enormous sense of gratitude at being first invited to be here today, and second, at getting to follow Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, who said everything I'm going to say. So we could all go now.
Right?
No, I'm going to Chazara. All right, it's good Chazara. That's exactly right. I should also, truth in advertising, I am by training a psychologist, and I'm not trained as an educator. I'm a child psychologist. And for many, many years, the field of psychology focused on deficit and disease. We studied people who had psychological illnesses and tried to understand how to make them better. And about 25, 30 years ago, the field of psychology said, you know, there's another way to go about this. We can go into ghetto settings and we can study substance abuse, drug addicts, and depressed individuals and people who are traumatized. Or we can go into those same inner city settings where people are struggling with all kinds of problems, and we could study the children who not only survive, but thrive, who excel. We can study those people who deal with physical, medical illness, and who actually emotionally stay strong and resilient. And that began the study in a field called positive psychology. And why am I telling you this? Because one of the findings in the field of positive psychology is the importance of gratitude, is that the act, the experience of being a grateful, gracious person is actually very good for our health. It's good for our medical health, it's good for our mental health, and therefore as parents, I'm a parent and a grandparent, don't we want anything that's good for our children, that's good for your health, we want to figure out.
The breakout sessions are now ready to begin. Everyone, please.
We're ahead of you.
Places.
We're advanced. We've already begun. If it's good for our children, we want to figure out how to do that. In addition, I will tell you that as a parent, this season of the year, when the media, whether it's print media that comes into your home or that you see on the side of a bus, or if your children watch TV or listen to the radio, is bombarded with, get the latest Hatchimals, get the latest this. And you hear stories of parents waiting online, and I know when my children were little, they would watch something on TV, they would see it and they'd say, Emma, get me that, Emma, get me that, Emma, get me that. And it made me nauseous. I mean, literally nauseous, to the extent that I taught my children when they were very little that the only acceptable phrase when they saw something they wanted was to say, Emma, for my birthday, or Emma, next Hanukkah, or Emma, for my Afikoman present, could I get? If it wasn't prefaced with that, I couldn't stand hearing it. Because the, you know, children's nature, apropos of the marshmallow test, is I see it, it looks great, get me that. I want it. Give me that. I want it. So we really want to figure out how do we get children past this give me. And by the way, the give me doesn't end when they're little. They just want bigger things when they get bigger. Let me first define what gratitude is. Because when you define gratitude, you also say, wow, I want that for my children. Gratitude is not just saying thanks. It's not the thank you very much, thank you, that was lovely, thank you. You know, I walked to shul, I was out of town until last night, until very late last night, flying back. Talk about gratitude to make it home earlier than 3 o'clock in the morning. It's not just when you walk to shul and everybody says thank you to the crossing guard. Very important. That's lovely, but that's manners. I want to talk about something deeper, and that is the gratitude that is a felt sense of wonder, thankfulness, and appreciation for life. A felt sense of wonder, thankfulness, and an appreciation for life. Now, by the way, if you really think about that definition, that is such a gift to give children, to have children who can wonder, to have children who feel thankful, who can resonate with what they have and can appreciate life. It means that they can stand in the face of greatness and appreciate greatness. It means that they can see themselves as small compared to something great and miraculous, but that they also can see themselves as part of that and be thankful for it. And as I said, it matters because gratitude correlates with self-esteem, with optimism, with positive mood, life satisfaction, reduced stress, better sleep, better social relationships. So if we know it's good, how do we get children there? What I'd like to do is for just a minute consider some Jewish roots of gratitude, of hakarat hatov, how central it is to who we are. Then talk about a few roadblocks that we need to get around, some psychological roadblocks. And then how do we get children where we want them to be? So on your source sheets, the first source you have is really the proof text that we as Jews, Yehudim, the root comes from Todah. It comes from thankfulness. And that Rashi talks about when Judah is born, that mom says, I've gotten more than my share, and therefore I need to give thanks. The Vayikra Rabbah tells us that in the future, there will be, Mashiach will come, there will be no need for sacrifices any longer, but one. Which sacrifice will remain? The Todah. And the last piece I would offer as proof is when we daven, we can, I'm sorry if I'm out of copies. There may be, here. This is the wrong text. This is from the wrong one. Got it. They're mixed up from the talk. So you have to share with your neighbor. You have to be friendly in this talk if I don't have enough. The last proof I will give you is that if you think about our davening, we can have a shliach tzibur daven for us. Right? They can say all of our tefillot. They can even say chazaras hashas. But what do we have to say?
Modim.
You cannot appoint somebody to be grateful for you. You have to experience that, and you have to voice it yourself. So we have very clearly in our cultural DNA that we are people of thanks. It's in our very name, Yehudim. And yet we have some challenges we have to combat. And the first challenge we will call either habituation or affluenza. If you've ever heard the term affluenza. Affluenza is like, you know, the flu of having too much. But habituation is the psychological term. Consider the following piece of research. If you drive, as I do every single day, on the Cross Bronx, and you drive on the Cross Bronx, and your day in, my trip into work is a breeze. It should all hell by be the way it was this morning. You know, you just scoot in, and there's no traffic. You don't hit any potholes. Wonderful. And then when I drive home, and I have an equally wonderful trip, I will not be thankful for the trip home. This is human nature. Because I had a good trip this morning. This is just another good trip. I'm habituated to the goodness. Lahavdil, if I have a miserable morning, I have a flat tire, there's endless traffic, I follow the ways of God. You know, ways? I call it the ways of God. You never argue with the ways of God. But sometimes even ways is driving me through the bowels of the Bronx and gets me on some parkway or highway or road where it's all, there's some accident and I'm backed up and I'm late for a meeting and I have a miserable trip in. And then I drive home and I sail. Now I will say, oh, it's wonderful. It's terrific. So the problem is that when our lives are blessed with goodness, we don't notice the goodness. We stop noticing it. The people in the, there's so many writers writing in the time of the Shoah. Etty Hillusum, a Dutch Jewish writer who was well known for her diaries that were in the Westerbork concentration camp, says that as life becomes harder and more threatening, it also becomes richer. Because the fewer expectations we have, the more good things of life become unexpected gifts that we accept with gratitude. Lahavdil, which one of us wants our children, God forbid, to live through famine, to live through illness, to live through hardship? So the challenge is, how do we help children not habituate to the goodness around them and resonate with all that they have and be thankful for it? We'll come back to the answer to that, but I just want to lay out what the problem is. And by the way, this is a problem that is recognized by our Torah sages as well as by modern day psychologists. Rabbeinu Bachya wrote in Chovos Halvavos, introduction to the section 2, he writes, people grow up surrounded with a superabundance of divine favors, which they experience continuously, and to which they become so used that they come to regard these as essential parts of their being. We take it for granted. Now, if you think about it, again, so many of our ritual practices are geared to blocking this, to addressing this. You know, every time you go to the bathroom, we have a reminder. It's a nace. I remember hearing Rob Tversky speak to a group of parents about the wonders of the human body. He was talking about eyes. That, you know, if our two eyes do not move in exact tandem, we lose our ability to see depth perception. And there are thousands of muscles in each eye. And what a nace that all day long these eyes work in perfect tandem and unison in order to allow me to see, to drive on the cross Bronx, you know, to do all the things that we do. And we totally don't think about what an amazing nace our bodies are, what a bracha it is when they work well, but we have Yashar Atzar. We have a bracha that we say before we eat food and a bracha that we say after we eat food. Why? Why do we do that? To recognize where this comes from. I mean, most of us didn't grow the cucumber ourselves. We didn't grow the apple. We didn't grow the orange. And quite frankly, I love to garden. And I will tell you, as much as love and care as I put into gardening, I recognize it's not all on me. You know, sometimes there's a natural environment or supernatural environment operating here, and it's thanks to that my garden grows or in some years doesn't grow so well. There's a Pirkei Avot that I always struggled with. I think it's Mishnah. It comes in Mishnah 2. Do I not put it in there? You know, it talks about, Rav Shimon says that if you're walking along, and while you're studying, you break off your studying, and you say, look how beautiful that tree is. Look how gorgeous that mountain is, that you've committed a great chait. And it's as if you were guilty of an offense that's punishable by death. And when I first read this, I thought, oh my gosh, but I do that all the time. I sucker from did me in. I just woke up every morning and said, there have to be more brachas. Like, there aren't enough brachas for this. This is too magnificent, too spectacular. How could I have, again, the schus to, like, be standing here and seeing this at this moment? And, you know, if a moose happens to come or that, then it's, like, really amazing. So am I guilty of something punishable by death? But then I went and looked at the commentaries, and Bunim writes in his commentator, the issue is not that we break off our learning to look at nature. The punishable by death comes if we fail to understand from where that nature comes. And if we fail to recognize with Hakarat HaTov that Hashem is, his hand is in this. It's the hand of Hashem that we're looking at in the Rocky Mountains, that we're looking at in that tree, that we're looking at in that fruit, vegetable, whatever it is we eat. Okay, so we will get, text that I gave you here, just another proof that our sages and the Torah understood this notion of habituation bias. It understood that amidst goodness, we need to be forced to recognize and be thankful. There is a very mysterious recollection in Torah of the Yom Tovim. There is a pasuk that talks about, I think it's Pesach first, and then it talks about Rosh Hashanah, and then it talks about, but in between talking about the two Yom Tovim comes a statement that when you reap a harvest, you have to leave the corners, you have to leave leket for the stranger. What is it doing there? This is the section in the Torah, it's the parsha that talks about all the holidays and all the karbanos that we should bring for the holidays. What in the middle of the holidays are we talking about leaving the corners of my field for the harvest? And commentators write that it's exactly at this time. Think about what it was like in Yerushalayim to come for the festivals. Thousands of Yidins joining in Yerushalayim, coming up to Har HaBayit, everybody filled with the joy of the holiday, with feeling the fullness and gratitude, that it would be natural at that point in time to rest on our laurels, to think, to habituate, to say, life's good. I don't notice poor people. I don't notice that there are people who have nothing. I don't know to give thanks because, you know, I'm in the middle of this happy holiday. I'm filled with my friends. Such a nice social scene in Yerushalayim. You know, it's very nice. So the Torah comes and reminds us that even in these highest moments of communal celebration, that we have to remember our duty to be gracious, our duty to be thankful. Okay, second challenge. So we talked about habituation challenge. Second challenge is, there's a clock there. Okay. Second challenge is responsibility bias. Here's how responsibility bias goes. If I go to a team of workers and I say, you all just worked on a very important project in the firm, I'd like you to write down how much each person did. What percentage of the work? There are five people on the team. What percentage of the work did you think each person did? Again, human nature is such that I will always overestimate the amount of work I did. I will underestimate the amount of work other people did. Same if I go to a marriage, ask husband and wife separately. Getting ready for Shabbat, what percentage is you, what percentage is her? Don't laugh, men and women. Doing the taxes, what percentage is you, whatever it is, what percentage? Okay, what percentage is who? If you ask people, they will always give themselves more credit and not the other. There's one way, by the way, around this. There's one way that ameliorates or mediates this responsibility bias. And that is if you ask people first, not how much did you do, but you say, first I'm going to ask you how much your spouse did. Now, think about how much you did. If you ask them first to focus on the contribution of the other. What does this have to do with gratitude? Well, first of all, if I think nobody on my team did anything, my natural bias is to think I did more work than everybody and to underestimate them, then I'm not going to be grateful or thankful. But I'd like to take another way of thinking about it, because I think that today's generation may experience, and we may even experience, the responsibility bias in a different way. And that really goes to our, hashkacha pratit, that how much do we believe is God's and how much do we believe is ours? Do we over-assign responsibility to ourselves? We say it's us, when really we have to see the hand of God in things. And we have to acknowledge that my good, my welfare is coming from a divine source. And there are times in children's lives, developmentally, when this is less comfortable. I have a 2-year-old grandchild that you ask her where God is, she'll tell you, very comfortably, Hashem is here, Hashem is there. Hashem is truly everywhere. up, down, everywhere, round. Comfortable, no existential large questions. Oh. Ask an adolescent, where is God? Ask an adolescent who's struggling in their life. Ask an adolescent who's not happy, where is God? And it's a harder question. And the responsibility bias may be operating in them not seeing or not believing the important role that God plays in their life. So how do we overcome these challenges? And how do we raise gracious, thankful children? And I was listening to Rabbi Ward Sachs and thinking all of these 10 could apply. I have three. I have three simple rules, and I want to really, although they work, I feel in many areas of parenting, I want to focus them particularly on gratitude. And those three things are what we value, what we live, and what we teach. That as parents, we have to really think very hard about what we value, what we live, and what we teach. So what do I mean by value? Our children note what is important to us. Now, how do they know what's important to us? Largely by how we spend our time and what gets airtime at our Shabbat table, what we talk about. Years ago, I heard Robert Brooks, the self-esteem guru, was presenting at a hospital I was working at, and he asked a question that I was embarrassed by because I had the wrong answer. He said, what's the first thing you ask your children when they come in after school? being a busy working mother, the first thing I would always ask is, what's the homework? What homework do you have to do? What's due tomorrow? What do we have to do? What's on the agenda for tonight? Busy working mom, three kids, everybody has to do homework. Got to get everyone in bed, you know. I need to have misudar. I need to be orderly. And I realized that what that communicated to my children very clearly was the importance of academic success, which heaven knows. My husband and I share a lot of degrees together. We're academics. They know that we're learners and books matter. But I realized that I wasn't asking them, who did you play with?
Yeah.
And who did you share with? And who were you nice to? And who did you help today? Who did you include? And so why would they think that I value that if I don't talk about it and ask about it? If I don't post on my refrigerator door pictures of them being a good friend, then why would they think that it matters to me that they're a good friend if all I put up are the hundreds on the spelling test? So we have to think about what are we talking about in front of our children, and how do they know what's important to us? And just in case you should think, They know I value gratitude. They know I think it's important. After all, I've always told them, say thank you to Aunt Sadie for that scarf. I know it's 3,000 miles too long, but say thank you anyway. But they know I value it. They don't. Unless you say, this is really important to us as a family. This is who we are. This is what we do. Let's talk about it. How can we thank the mailman this season? How can we thank the person who cleans our house? How can we show grandma that we're thankful that she invited us to come visit her in Florida? You know, whatever it is, engage our children. And by the way, I just had this discussion with my mother. It was eye-opening. We just discovered, my mother and I, that we both love giving gifts. I love giving gifts. Like, I love, and my husband thinks it's bizarre, because I will spend hours and hours making something, finding exactly the right bite. When he said, you know, Amazon, one dial, you could just order it. I just made my granddaughter a Shabbat Ima kit. And he's like, Amazon, $28. You could have ordered it for what you spent in the time. I said, but it's from my hand. I wanted to make it for her. I love doing that. My mother loves doing that also. So, you know, discovered that. But I never know that my mother loves giving gifts. I love getting her gifts, but I didn't, you know, I love from her, but I didn't know. We just had this conversation. I learned this. My mother's, God willing, 83, Bay of Esrim, she should be giving gifts. But I don't know if my children know that I love it. I do it, but I don't know, do they know that I really enjoy it? And a lot of what we do as adults, we do privately. So you're probably, you know, writing all kinds of tips this holiday season and putting it in envelopes and giving, your children may not know you're doing it. You may be contributing to gifts for the teachers at school. Your children may not know you're doing it. If you value it, then it needs to make headlines. They need to know. You need to talk about it and show them that it's important to you. But you can't only value it. You also have to live it. Now, the perfect example of shooting yourself right in the foot is saying, children, we think it's really important that we be thankful. Oh, gosh, we have to write another check. I can't believe we have to thank the cleaning lady. You know, like, what do we have to get her for Christmas? You know, for Xmas or for Hanukkah? I can't believe we have to thank those people. Oops. If we do that, then we become unbelievable parents. And I don't mean that in a good way. I mean not believable. We are not people of our word because we say one thing and do another. If we are going to value it, then we have to actually be grateful, gracious people. Then we have to stop when we are at, you know, we just recently found our children's diaries. We made them keep diaries the first time we took them to Eretz Yisrael. And we found them. It's amazing. It's just absolutely amazing. The oldest was 13. It was his bar mitzvah that we went for. And he writes eloquently about walking in the footsteps of Avraham Avinu and standing and seeing Har Moriah the way Avraham Avinu must have seen it. And it's breathtaking. And the next one writes about Coca-Cola bottles and the Hebrew language on it. You know, but okay. But you have to take them to the Kotel the first time, and you have to tell them how thankful you are to be here and what it meant for Jewish people to literally wail, to be able to see out a window this wall but not touch it, and how fortunate we feel to be able to be there. I will tell you that my youngest child was so enamored. We so built up the hotel for him that he wrote his petek. It was like on a piece of paper this big because he couldn't write small. He was 7 years old, and he folded it up, and he put it in, and he then said to his Abba, can we go see Hashem read it now? We have mail slots. So he thought this is a mail slot.
Priceless.
You know, you put it in and Hashem must be on the other side. Let me just go read it. But we had really built it up that this is a place that you get to write tefillos, write Hashem. So we have to inculcate the gratitude in our children. And sometimes we do that, you know, I'm going to date myself, but when I was growing up, if you left food on your plate, they would say children are starving in Biafra, you know, and you would
in
tell
Europe,
your,
I'm older
and you would tell, well, you're older, for me it was Africa, and yeah. I'd say mail it, you know, so package it and send them, I'm not eating those Brussels sprouts. But we do have to help our children see that there are people less fortunate. Our Jewish day schools, I think, do a marvelous job through tzedakah, and some teachers and educators are so magically brilliant about doing this. One preschool teacher I know had their class was collecting food for the food pantry. But she realized that preschoolers couldn't understand that the cans that they bring in feed hungry people. So she arranged every Arab Shabbat, every Friday, she would bring three children who would go to the food pantry where they would thank the children for their donation. The children would see they have, in our neighborhood, they have like a little restaurant set up where the homeless can come and eat, and they would actually say to them, you see this can? We're going to put that in our soup. And you see this can? That's going to go in this casserole. Because preschoolers couldn't understand otherwise how their work was making a difference. I know Jewish high schools that have taken kids on field trips to Habitat for Humanity, where they can see literally the visual efforts of their hands, that they are building homes for people in need. We have to do that as parents and as educators as well. We have to take children with us when we volunteer. We have to encourage them to join us on drives. I was in Eretz Yisrael a few weeks ago, and in the Shuk Erev Shabbat, this is when the fires were burning, there are people holding up signs, give sweets to the firefighters. Buy a sweet for yourself, buy one for the firefighters. And they had bags, you know, within moments, bags were filled with goodies to bring to nourish the firefighters. But we have to say to our kids, this is what we're doing. Which suite do you want to buy? Let's go bring something and engage them. So we have to value it and we have to live it. But the third part is that we have to teach it. We have to not assume that graciousness and generosity comes naturally. You know, some children are born with the thank you gene pretty well installed. You know, they don't need a lot of prompting. They are in awe of the world and appreciate what it has to offer them. And really, they get it almost naturally, the same way that some children walk and talk with very little intervention from us. But then there are some children who need a little physical therapy. And some children need a little speech therapy. And there are some children who need a little gratitude therapy. They need a little remedial gratitude, you know, intervention. They need to learn. And by the way, the marshmallow test, this ability to put one's own needs on the back burner, to wait, to not be so impulsive, is very clearly temperamental, and some children are just born more patient and more empathic and able to see the needs of others than others. So we may have to teach. We may have to say, this is the lashon, this is the language that you use when you go to a birthday party and you get, you know, a goodie bag. Do you know that you're supposed to say thank you? This is what, when you're a teenager and you get, you know, invited to, whether it's sweet 16 parties or bar bat mitzvahs or, you know, this is what you do as a guest at a simcha. Do you know that this is the way that you're supposed to behave? This is what is expected of you. By the way, the best time to teach these kinds of things is before the moment. To teach in the moment, you know, when a child has just gotten something and it's not exactly what they want, that is not the time to teach them how to express gratitude. Well, they need to be prepared for that ahead of time. You need to tell them in the moment. Some of the other things that we can teach about gratitude that are just... just general strategies that have been found that build gratitude that are, they're going to sound absolutely ludicrous, and if there wasn't good research on it, I wouldn't believe it myself. But keeping a gratitude journal, writing down three times, three things every day that you're thankful for. And the writing is important, not just thinking.
On what age?
Not just saying, I'm sorry?
What age are you talking about?
Any age. Write down three things. Write down one thing that you felt good about. Write down something. The research, by the way, is stunning, not just in that when people do this and they write, the experiment looked at one group that wrote positive things, one group that wrote negative things, three things that went wrong for the day that I'm complaining and fetching about, and the other group were just told to write three sentences. No direction whatsoever, what they write about their day. The group who wrote the negative things were more depressed, had more visits to the doctor, had more health problems. The group that wrote the positive things was healthier, happier, and exercised more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for that alone, I should be writing a
well, which is the cause and which is the effect?
We don't know, but it seems to really impact mood, to focus us. And I think it's just a matter of focusing. Again, it's getting away from habituation. It's getting away from the responsibility bias. And it's saying, I'm really going to take a minute to think about something good today that I'm thankful for. And it shifts, it gives us a different lens to look through. It forces us to recognize and to write those things down. The other thing that makes a huge difference in gratitude is prayer. Tefillah is an antidote to narcissism. Tefillah done right with kavanah, what's the intent of tefillah? It is about wonder, awe, and appreciating that you're part of something larger. It is about gratitude and thankfulness. Our tefillot in particular are filled with thankfulness. They resonate with thankfulness and wonder and awe all over the place if we know the words. If we understand the meaning, there is a day school not far from here, middle school Beis Medrash, that rather than saying Dalef Nehmi Ata Omeid, one year they ask their students, if you were about to approach Hashem, what sentence would you write? You're about to approach Hashem, and that's what is written above the Aron in that Beis Medrash, and there are things like, I hope you're listening. You're my last chance. I hope I'm worthy. I'm scared. These are middle school kids. Wrote this. So if we approach tefillah in the right way, it is an incredible gratitude builder. I think when we do all three, when we value, we live, and we teach, gratitude, graciousness, wonder, awe, a feeling part of an amazing world that Hashem has granted us, that we give our children an amazing gift. I'll close with this note and then take a quick question, and then I unfortunately have to run. We're very late. It's a great quote that comes from Winnie the Pooh. Piglet noticed that even though he had a very small heart, it could hold a rather large amount of gratitude. From the smallest to the largest, we really have endless reservoirs of thanks. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Any last comments, questions?
Yeah. How do you draw the fine line between a parent wanting to share with the child what they're doing and yet not wanting to or avoiding or arrogant, showy?
You can do it in very subtle ways, and you can also do it by engaging the child in the process. In other words, if it's not, I want to show you what a good Baal Chesed I am, but rather, you know what? I have an opportunity to do some Chesed. Would you come out with a cocoa? Would you do it with me? You know, this is how we write a check for Chesed on love. You want to put the stamp on it? Let's go mail it in the mailbox. Make them part of the process.
Yeah.
Thank you. Now, of course, I'm taking a $2,000.